Hey everybody, it's Michael. As you can probably already tell, this episode is going to be a bit different, and that's because, believe it or not, this month marks the third birthday of Unresolved. Crazy, right? Can't believe how fast time is going by. So to mark the occasion, I just wanted to do a fun little Ask Me Anything episode. So a couple of weeks ago, I put out some social media posts and put out a little update and asked for you to give me some questions, and I figured, you know, it'd be a fun way to mark the occasion. But before I get into that, I just want to thank everyone that came out to the Southern True Crime Podcast meetup last weekend. It took place in Decatur, Georgia, and in attendance were Nina from Already Gone, Erica from Southern Fried True Crime, Laura and Brooke from The Fall Line, Steven from Trace Evidence, Tyler from The Minds of Madness, Lindsay and Jen from Corpus Delicti, Mo from Targeted, Melissa and Mandy from Moms and Murder, and Dobby, who was the cutest service dog that I've ever seen. It was a lot of fun, and I really hope that we'll get to do another one soon. But anyhow, I will get straight into the questions. Alright, so the first question came in from my buddy Michael Glantz, and he asked, "My question is, how do you choose which stories to make episodes out of, and which stories to pass on? Is there a certain element that you look for in stories that make them more attractive to you?" I wouldn't say that there's any one criteria that I look for. I guess the only thing that I try to do is space out different types of stories, if that makes sense. So if I cover, you know, a serial killer, I don't want to jump into another serial killer the very next week. I think that doing that could just get very redundant and you end up coming across the same themes and, I don't know. It seems to dilute the story, in my opinion. So that's why I'm trying to incorporate more variety in the podcast. So, you know, if I do a serial killer episode, I'll want to do, you know, the founding of Bitcoin the next week, stuff like that. So to answer the first part of your question, and that's, you know, how do I find the stories to make episodes out of? I tend to just go after stories that I find interesting at the time. So I'm sure that not a lot of you know this, but I end up browsing, you know, the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit quite a bit. And I see the write-ups there and, you know, I'll find a story and it's just really interesting and I'll end up focusing in on it. And then I'll push back the plans of episodes and stuff that I'm already working on. So I really just go with the wind. As for which stories I tend to pass on, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out a way to articulate this, but I try and not focus on stories that other podcasts have already focused on. So that's why I tend to pick stuff that's, you know, very unique and very fresh to me, because I find that very interesting. So, just for the record, I know there have been a lot of people requesting me to cover JonBenet Ramsey and Mara Murray. I'm probably never going to cover those, because I feel like, you know, there have already been 1,000 podcasts that have focused on them, and I don't think there's anything that I could bring to the table which would be new or unique or interesting. So, sorry to everyone holding on to those. The next question comes from my friend Charles, and he asks, "Out of all the cases you have covered, which case would you like to see resolved the most? I know the Eerons must have been high on that list, but which one now?" Of course, Charles is referring to the East Area Rapist or the original Night Stalker, who you may also know as the Golden State Killer, who was just caught on April 25th. And that was definitely high on the list. That might have been the top one because, you know, that was the story that started this podcast. It's kind of why I wanted to start doing Unresolved. So I was really happy that seems to be going towards a resolution. It's really hard to say because, you know, I have established kind of personal connections to some of the stories I've covered. You know, I've spoken to some family members and friends and loved ones and, you know, the ones that have come from small towns. I've spoken to people from the town and it's the cloud that's hanging over the town, if that makes sense. I'd say some of the cases I feel like I have a really strong attachment to are the cases out of Bardstown, Kentucky. You know, that was the death of Officer Jason Ellis, the death of Kathy and Samantha Netherland, the death of Crystal Rogers and her father, Tommy Ballard. You know, a whole bunch of really horrible, violent murders happening in a very short period of time. That seems to be the one that I get the most emails and messages about. So I'd really like to see at least one of those cases find a resolution. And, you know, there are also cases that I've covered that I have almost like a familial connection to. So going back to the first season again, you know, I covered the case of Misty Copsey, who was a girl that disappeared from my hometown of Puyallup, Washington. So that's one that I would really like to see solved. And then more recently, I just covered the story of Andrea DeGelder, who's a woman that went missing just a few blocks away from me. And it seems like they have a culprit in custody that they like for that case, but I'd still really like to see someone actually get charged in that one. And then other than that, you know, there's a story that I covered almost a year ago. It was the disappearance of a man named Chip Campbell. And after doing that episode, I actually like, I don't know. I was in a funk for a while, because I just got to learn so much about Chip, and he seemed like such a great guy. You're reading about his story, and it's almost like you want to, like, shake him and get him on the right path, because he just seemed like a good guy that was going down the wrong road. So I'd really like to see the family of Chip, you know, his sisters, his friends. I'd really like to see all of them get some resolution. So to answer your question, Charles, I don't really have any one particular case, but there are definitely a handful that I feel a really strong connection to, and I'd really like to see them solved. I have a question from my friend Hannah on Twitter, and she asks, is there a story you feel is too dark for you to cover? That's a tough one, because I've definitely already covered some pretty dark stories. However, I do have to say there is one story which I hope to start putting out next weekend, by the time you're listening to this, and it is one that I've struggled with for about 6 months now, because I've learned a lot of really interesting things about it, but it's definitely the darkest and most violent story that I've ever covered. So I feel like once you guys hear that, you'll know what I mean. It's just like one of those cases that's so brutal and almost grotesque that it's hard to put into words. But I definitely don't think there's a story that's too dark for me to cover. Usually if I don't cover a story, it's for other reasons, you know, like lack of information or, you know, just not being able to make a cohesive narrative out of it. But Hannah had a second part of her question, which read, also, if you had to pick one of your stories that you've covered to know what happened, which would you choose and why? I think I already covered that with the last question, but, you know, Bardstown, I'd really like to know what's going on there. Misty Copsey, I'd really like to know what's going on for her family. Chip Campbell, again, family and friends. And then Andrea DeGelder, you know, for my own state of mind. Having a woman disappear from just 4 or 5 blocks away, you know, it's... You hear about these stories and they happen from miles away, but then it happens in basically your own backyard, and it's terrifying. My friend Sam McGrath asked, is there any certain case that you have decided to never do, whether because it's overdone or for personal reasons or something else? Personally, I have kind of like the big three that I will never cover. And for me, that's O.J. Simpson, Mara Murray, and JonBenet Ramsey. And it's like nothing against those cases. There's very interesting things about them, and you know, I do like reading about them, but I don't think with those three cases, there's anything new I can contribute, so I'll probably never get to those. Like I said, I'm sorry to those that have been requesting those. You know, I've had a lot of people requesting Mara Murray for quite a while, but there's just so many other podcasts and documentaries and books about all those stories. There's really nothing I could do besides putting it in unresolved podcast form. Rachel, my friend from over at Yours and Murder, asked me, boxers or briefs? And she stated that she was just here to make it weird. Well, joke's on you, Rachel. I host a murder podcast, basically. Nothing can make it weird. Anyhow, I am neither a boxers or briefs guy. I'm more of a boxer briefs guy. They offer the form of briefs with the relief of boxers, so top notch. Thanks for the levity, Rachel. Jonathan Hendrickson asks, how many potential suspects covered on episodes have contacted you, if any? Was it an informative, defensive, or even vaguely threatening way? If you can discuss, of course. So, personally, I haven't been contacted by any suspects. Normally, whenever I put out an episode, I try and focus on suspects and persons of interest that the police have publicly named. So, you know, people that they've actually arrested, charged, or even put out a statement about. I originally started doing that because I was, you know, when I first started making the podcast, I had a budget of $0 and I was legitimately worried that I would get sued. But as it's gone on, I've realized that's just a very, you know, it's a way to keep things focused on the story and the people that it actually affected. You know, I don't want to start a podcast and then go off on witch hunts and start blaming people that haven't been named by police as suspects. So thankfully, I haven't been contacted by any of them. However, there have been a few times where people involved in stories have contacted me. One in particular you may be familiar with if you listen to the Misty Copsey episodes is a guy named Corey Bober. He has been in constant contact with me, and he is a very... I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. He's an interesting character. That's the only way I could think of phrasing that without him threatening another round of lawsuits, but that's probably the most interesting correspondence I've had throughout Unresolved. Next, my buddy Peter asked me, when are you going to do another Australian case? I've loved what you've done so far. That's a good one, Pete. I really love covering Australian stories. I'm sure that you all have pieced that together by now. I've always felt a strong affinity for Australia and, you know, kind of like the movies and the music and I'm actually hoping to visit sometime soon, so hopefully we could get a little Australian meet and greet going. But I'm hoping to do another Australian case very, very soon. There's one that I've been circling for a little bit now, and I'm hoping to cover it within the next month or so. Only time will tell. Like I was hinting at earlier, I'm very wishy-washy with the stories that I cover, and I tend to move things around pretty constantly, so we'll see. Hopefully soon. Next, my buddy Thomas Ahern asks, are you always happy when a case gets resolved, or does some part of you wish it had remained a mystery? It's a very interesting question. I'd like to think that I'm always happy when a case gets resolved, especially when it's a criminal case. I think in that situation, I'm always happy for, you know, like a John or Jane Doe to get their name back, or a murder to be solved, something like that. However, I do think there are certain stories that, you know, work better as mysteries. It's kind of hard to put it into words. I don't know if anyone here listens to Hoax, which is the other podcast I do, but there's kind of like an ongoing internet conspiracy about Andrew WK and whether he's, you know, an actor playing a part. And I feel like that is a very interesting story that I kind of hope never gets wrapped up. I kind of like the open-ended nature of it and the fact that it's kind of this big hoax slash mystery thing. But I like to say that generally I'm pretty always happy when a criminal case gets wrapped up, at least wrapped up properly. My friend Jaka from Twitter, or is it Jasa, asked, was there ever a story that you may have started to cover and then discovered a lot of the info was less than truthful? Also, what's the most covered by other podcasters story that you've done? To answer the first part of the question about there being a story where the info might have been less than truthful, thankfully I've not really run into that. I've definitely covered a couple of stories that, you know, were definitely older, like back in the 1960s. And I included details from the newspaper reports that people tell me, you know, oh, that might not have been accurate because so-and-so said so-and-so. So, you know, when you cover those older stories, especially from small towns, you kind of have to trust these newspapers that reported on certain facts, and you kind of have to take it as just gospel. But thankfully, that's not something I've really run into. I tend to go with a lot of really good sources for my information, and I try and file as many FOIA requests and get as many actual official documents as I possibly can so I could validate if the story matches up between this newspaper report and the actual police documents. Then to answer the second part of the question, what's the most covered by other podcast story that I've done? It's probably gotta be the Zodiac. That was one that I actually put off for quite a while because, you know, there's so many documentaries and books and TV specials made about it. And it's already been done by so many other podcasts, but I just wanted to put it together almost for fun. That was one of the first real mysteries that I got immersed in, so. Other than that, I'd say probably the Golden State Killer. I mean, back when I first covered the story, you know, 3 years ago now, which is crazy to think, there weren't any other podcasts that had done it. So it was kind of cool getting to cover it then and kind of seeing, you know, tons of attention get drawn to the story. Now, you know, there's been the epic 5-part case file series and Criminology did a season on it. And there was the book and now all these TV specials. It's been really cool seeing all the attention get drawn to it. And then now, hopefully it get resolved. Mandy Steese asked me, how about covering the Las Cruces Bowling Alley Massacre? Well, thank you, Mandy. I am actually hoping to cover that over the next couple of months. So hopefully by the end of the year, you will get at least one episode about the Las Cruces Bowling Alley Massacre. My friend Heather from Huntsville asks, what was the case that really got you into true crime and unresolved mysteries? That one's actually a really easy answer for me. It was the Zodiac. You know, I used to watch Unsolved Mysteries when I stayed home from school and I was sick. Or pretending to be sick, but it was the Zodiac that was the first one that I, you know, got really obsessed with. It was in my early teenage years, and I think I found an old copy of the Zodiac, the book, and, you know, from there I just went on the huge, like, internet spiral every chance I got and tried to read as much as I possibly could. So that was the case that I think started it, and then I wasn't really interested in true crime stuff up until around the time that the first season of Serial came out. And then from there it was just me, you know, trying to watch whatever clips of Unsolved Mysteries I could online, and finally it just got to the point where I was like, I could make a podcast about this. That'd be interesting. The next question comes from my friend Jessica over at the Asian Madness podcast. What's up, Jessica? She asks, if you had to start yet another podcast, what would it be about? So that's a pretty loaded question, Jessica, considering I already host 2 podcasts. I would like some free time, thank you very much. I'm just kidding. I actually have had multiple thoughts about starting another podcast, and I have a few ideas. There's one that I'm kind of, sort of already working on, so I don't really want to talk about it, but it's a longer true crime serial type story, and it would be exploring a... Sorry, I'm trying not to give away too many details, because it's kind of in the process of being worked on, but it's a story that I've covered in the past, and I would kind of just like the chance to re-explore it in a longer, more detailed format. But I'm also weighing the possibility of making that a book project, so we'll see. However, I'm also hoping to start a third podcast over the next year or so, and that would be a music-themed podcast. And that would be based more on, you know, my love of the metal subgenres. Yes, believe it or not, I'm a huge fan of metal and hardcore and basically everything attached to them. But I'm hoping to do kind of like a historical look at certain metal bands. I think that would be pretty fun. The next question comes from Tomas Shibata. Hopefully I got that right. Sorry, everyone, I'm pretty terrible with names, so if I didn't use your last name, it's because I'm pretty sure I'll butcher it, and I don't want to seem like an asshole. Sorry. Anyhow, Tomas asks, I hope it's not a secret, but what are your case research logistics? I mean, how do you go about your work from the point when you decide to take up one particular case? Sometimes there's almost too much information, and other times it's very scarce. It's actually a really good question. Personally, I try and just gather as much information as I possibly can. So whenever I start looking into a story, you know, I'll scour the internet for resources, and then I'll use my newspaper subscription sites to scour old newspapers from the particular area that the story comes from. And, you know, on the very rare occasion, there are, you know, news clips that I could find, and there may be a documentary or two, but I tend to focus on the smaller stories, so there's generally only first-hand accounts in newspapers and kind of like official documents. So whenever possible, I try and file a FOIA request, and I'm pretty sure any podcast host will tell you this, but those are basically a huge roll of the dice. So to kind of get a peek behind the curtain, there are some stories, like the Chip Campbell episode, which is from down in Milton, Florida, and it's about a guy who disappeared just a couple of years ago. And I filed a FOIA request, and, you know, they gave me basically the entire police report with just some names and information redacted. And it was already in digitized form. So that was like, to me, that was the best thing that a police department could do for an unsolved case. You know, just keep some information behind the curtain and then release the rest to media sources and hope to get it out there. But then there are other times where I'll file a FOIA request and I'll basically get a giant middle finger and a fuck you from the police agencies. This has happened a few times, especially for cases that take place in California. They're actually like very draconian when it comes to the information from unsolved cases there. So even solved cases, believe it or not, there's one case that I tried filing a FOIA for and they said like, nah, we don't feel like it, bro. And it was a solved case. So it's really a roll of the dice. For some of the cases local to me, I filed FOIA requests, and that's the Millbrook twins, Tiffany Nelson, and there might have been one more. Anyhow, I filed the FOIA request, and I basically got nothing back. So that's why there are times where the information is very scarce, because you have to rely on first-hand accounts from family members, and, you know, when they're there, newspaper clips and stuff like that. So it's really like I try and get anything I can and just compile it all into a huge timeline of what happened, who said what, etc. Hopefully that answered your question. Hopefully I wasn't ranting too much there, but there have been some times where there were stories I had to drop just because there wasn't enough information out there. And, you know, I didn't want to put out an episode that was 5 minutes long. So, yeah, it really just depends. My buddy Adam from the Point Blank podcast asked me, is Ted Cruz the Zodiac? To keep it brief, I would say 100% yes. Thanks for the question, Adam. My buddy Robert, who worked with me on the Bible John episode, asked, I think I asked one time here if there were any cases which you felt were too disturbing or really too horrifying for you to cover on Unresolved. I think my modified question to that would be, are there any cases you covered on the podcast that you almost dropped midway in the research or writing process? Or are there any that you did start to work on that you abandoned because of how horrible or disturbing they were? Damn, Robert, going for the jugular. That's a really deep one. So the story that I'm putting out next weekend, I'm pretty sure it will either be two or three parts. That's one that was really disturbing for me to read. You know, it's just very violent and very visceral. And when you read about what happened, it almost makes you, like, doubt your faith in humanity, if that makes sense. So there have definitely been a couple of times where I was reading about these really violent, gory details, and I just thought that I wasn't up for it. So I think one that I have covered that I had to omit certain details from was the Alcacer Girls series. That's because when I cover a story, I tend to empathize quite a bit with the people in the center of it. And, you know, reading about these three teenage girls that were brutally tortured and raped and all that, it was hard for me to picture talking about that for hours on end. Because I tend to think about the people whose story I'm covering as people that I know. I know that's weird, but I don't know. I tend to put myself in other people's shoes. And when I read about these terrible things being done to their loved ones or even to them, it's just really hard to think about it and, you know, put it down on paper and then spend hours recording and editing it. But the series that I'm putting out next weekend, that's one that, like I said, I've been working on it since probably March, you know, so over half a year, and I just keep circling around it and getting back to it, and there's just so much violence in there, and that's probably the only one that I've seriously struggled with other than the Alcacer Girls. Getting towards the end now, but my friend Christina asks, which unresolved case, whether you've covered it or not, has freaked you out the most? Has anyone ever recognized your voice in person? Have you gotten any weird messages from listeners, psychics, or people involved in any of the stories you've covered? Why is your name spelled that way? Gave you a few to choose from. So I will try and get to all of those, because I find them really interesting. The first one, which unresolved case has freaked you out the most? That's definitely got to be the Golden State Killer, also known as the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker. Because when I first started covering that case, I was living in Central California. And, you know, it was at the time where the offender, you know, the Golden State Killer, wasn't getting a lot of attention. You know, when I first started this podcast 3 years ago, he didn't even go by the name Golden State Killer. So that's almost how much time has passed. That one kept me up at night. You know, whenever I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd hear, you know, branches smacking against the side of my house, my first thought was, oh God, it's happening. But that's probably the one that's freaked me out the most. There have been a few others. In particular, Andrea DeGelder, because it was such like a horrifying story that happened 4 blocks away from me. You know, it's easy to read about these stories and listen to them, but when they happen nearby you, it tends to shatter the illusion of the storytelling, if that makes any sense. Christina's next question, has anyone ever recognized your voice in person? Thankfully not. I'm a pretty awkward person. And I suffer from social anxiety at times, so thankfully I'm not nearly a celebrity. Next part of her question, have you gotten any weird messages from listeners, psychics, or people involved in any of the stories you've covered? I've only gotten a few messages from psychics. I tend not to respond because I think all of that is gobbledygook. I've gotten a few weird messages from listeners, mainly people that think I'm trying to glorify serial killers and stuff like that. It's kind of like this weird subculture that's popped up in the true crime world where, you know, people have Jeffrey Dahmer shot glasses and stuff like that. I find it very creepy and unsettling and weird. And again, those are people that I tend not to respond to because I think they're, you know, not worth responding to. And I have gotten a few messages from people involved in the stories I've covered. Most of them have been very positive. So when I first put out the first 3 episodes of the podcast about the original Night Stalker, now known as the Golden State Killer, I had a very nice response from Michelle Cruz, the sister of Janelle, and then also Debbie Domingo, who is one of the victim's daughters and has kind of become the face of the survivors. So, you know, I got some really nice messages from them, and it was kind of that steered me in a different direction. You know, I tried to put more of a focus on the stories of the people affected by the tragic events, and, you know, I really like that I can do that for people. I have gotten a few weird responses, like I touched on earlier. Corey Bober is a guy that's emailed me a few times and left very weird messages on my YouTube account. There have been a few other cases but I covered the case of Chase Masner, and one of the major themes from that story was drug use. And I thought that was a very interesting avenue, and turns out It's he was using drugs before his death, which is tragic and terrible, but there were a few people involved in that story, whose names I included, that were threatening legal action against me because I made those kind of like accusations of drug use. Hope that makes sense. I'm trying to stay kind of vague because it's still ongoing litigation and all that, but yeah. And then Christina's final question was, why is your name spelled that way? That's a good one. So like I say at the end of every episode, my first name is spelled M-I-C-H-E-A-L. You know, Michael is normally spelled A-E-L. Personally, I always joke that my parents probably just misspelled it on the birth certificate, but it's actually the old Irish spelling, I guess. Used to be pronounced differently way back in the day, and it was Mihel, something like that. Sorry, as you could tell, I'm not very cultured, but that's what I've read, that's what I've heard from my family, but they might just be trying to cover their ass so they don't look silly. Alright, the final question comes from Rona on Twitter, who asks, what made you decide to do a podcast of your own? And do you have any tips for anyone wanting to start their own podcast? Thanks. So I wanted to start my podcast because I've always been interested in, you know, kind of like weird, unsettling stories. I'm really interested in kind of like the dark side of humanity. And in particular, I got really into mysteries. I really like the open-ended nature of mysteries and how you can use your imagination to come up with all kinds of theories. But what made me really decide to do a podcast was I was listening to, so at the time there were only a few true crime mystery podcasts. Gotta give credit to Serial, Thinking Sideways, and Generation Y, which are all great shows. I kind of thought to myself, like, they've started podcasts, why can't I? Because, you know, I had a really cheap microphone at the time, and I had a strong interest to do it, so I figured why not. Now the true crime mystery podcast world is kind of blown up. It's kind of become its own little subculture, and it's really cool. But at the time, you know, there just weren't a lot out there. I thought, I can contribute something, and hopefully other people will like it. And as for the tips I have for someone wanting to start their own podcast, I would say just kind of go at it, kind of like the way I started. You know, do something because you want to do it, whether you find it entertaining or you think it's going to serve some greater purpose. I think you could just go for it. If I had to give some tips, I would say try and make sure that you have something that's unique. You know, you just don't just want to retread what someone else is doing. And I'd say, you know, try and make sure that you stay true to what you want. Because there have been a lot of times where I've tried to steer myself into different directions and, you know, I've taken myself both too serious and not serious enough. And I feel like I found a pretty good balance and I'm pretty happy with the way things are going. So I'd say, you know, stay true to yourself, do something because you want to do it, and then stick with it. Well, thank you to everyone for contributing questions for this little silly AMA. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much. When I don't have a script in front of me, I tend to just go off on weird tangents and have a hard time bringing it back to what the actual question was, so. Apologies if some of this didn't make any sense. Certain parts I had to keep pretty vague, because like I said, I don't want to get sued. But this was really cool. This was really fun. Hopefully we'll get to do another one soon. Might try and get some other podcasters involved. Could be kind of fun. Do a little roundtable Q&A. But anyhow, there's not going to be a full-length episode of Unresolved this weekend. However, there are hopefully going to be 2 or 3 coming out next weekend. Like I said, that's a very violent, dark story. It's one I've been circling for about 6 months now, if not longer. I hope it turns out. I'm probably going to be putting a disclaimer at the front because I'm pretty intimidated by it, if I'm being honest. But also, just a quick reminder, my other podcast, Hoax, is currently in the middle of its second season. So I've put out 2 episodes so far. The first was about one of the biggest scandals in Wisconsin state history. That was a doozy of a story. I have to thank a listener for introducing me to it. And then the second episode was about Andrew W.K. Yes, the musician. It's a wild story. It's pretty interesting. If I'm being honest, that was probably the most fun I've ever had putting together an episode. So you should check that out. And this weekend, I'm going to be putting out the 3rd episode of the new season, which is about World War II and one of the biggest military deceptions in history. Hoax is a cool way for me to explore the different side of my personality and cover all these stories that I wouldn't get to cover otherwise. So, yeah, check it out. Thank you to everyone for supporting Unresolved for as long as you have. I mean, I can't believe it's been 3 years. Jeez. You guys are saints for being able to listen to my voice for that many dozens of hours. I honestly can't thank all of you enough, especially all the patrons. You guys have helped me make this what it is today. Seriously, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Anyhow, that's it for me this week. Like I said, hopefully I made sense, and I will talk to you all later.